Smart Daddy Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer the effects of vibriosis, which is what I should have suffered last week when I mispronounced it, vibrosis. If you infected me with the idea that you missed this week's show, you know that you're stuck with a lackluster host. You know this. This is not even news to the most casual listener. The Hot Sauce Principle. With a catchy book title like that, how could I call the show anything else? The author, Brandon Smith, shares his wisdom and advice on applying hot sauce in your career and at home. He also reveals how to protect yourself from getting burned. It's all based on his many years of coaching and consulting with CEOs, leadership teams, and boards. On Tony's Take Two, our nation is counting on you. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. It's my pleasure to welcome Brandon Smith. He's the workplace therapist, expert in leadership communication, and curer of workplace dysfunction. He's been featured in The Wall Street Journal, Fast Company, CNN, FoxNews.com, NPR, Forbes, and many other outlets. His book is The Hot Sauce Principle, How to Live and Lead in a World Where Everything is Urgent All of the Time. And that's what brings him to nonprofit radio. He's at theworkplacetherapist.com and at the WP Therapist. What a pleasure. Welcome, Brandon Smith.
Tony, really glad to be with you today and on your show.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure to have you. And you've got all these media credentials, Fast Company, CNN, FoxNews.com. You realize, though, that those have all led you to this moment on nonprofit radio.
This moment. This is the pinnacle. Those things got me here today, and I'm excited about it.
Exactly right. This is your zenith, your peak.
It is.
Your denouement. It's nonprofit radio. It's of your exposure to media is here on nonprofit radio. So welcome to the best moment so far. All right. So obvious question. What's the hot sauce? What's the hot sauce principle? Lead us into this, and then we'll talk about how folks can employ it to help themselves and their families even.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to go back in time a little bit. I'm going to go back 5 years or so. And what was striking me in all the clients I was working with, folks in nonprofit space, for-profit space, it could be universities, schools, public sector, it could be big companies, small companies, it didn't matter. What was true was two things. Time was everyone's most precious resource. It wasn't money, it was time. And everything felt urgent all the time. And in that world, it was causing us all to operate more like firefighters. And I'm sure your listeners can relate to that experience.
Yeah.
And so what hit me was, it was like hot sauce every day. Urgency by itself is like hot sauce. And a little bit of hot sauce, I love hot sauce, frankly. You put a little bit on something that's bland and adds a little focus, a little flavor. It adds interest. It gets you concentrating on it. But if everything that comes in on our plates that comes out of the kitchen is covered in hot sauce, the appetizer, the salad, the entree, the brownie, the iced tea, we're going to be overwhelmed and curl up in a ball. And that was what so many of the folks that I was working with were experiencing, was this feeling of burnout. And so the book really came from that idea of, how do we manage the right amount of hot sauce in life? Both when we're leading others or when others are kind of guiding us, how do we manage that flow of hot sauce? So it's adding more interest and focus and not just burning us out. And so that was the impetus for the book, Tony. And that's really the whole idea behind the concept.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for being a guest. We're wrapped up. No. Brandon's looking at me like, wait a minute. You told me maybe
interview I've ever done in the history of interviews, Tony.
We're having fun. So yes, you talk about uncontrolled urgency. That's what we're victim of. We're trying to avoid creating this uncontrolled urgency in our lives, in our teams, right? As you say, too much hot sauce. It's no good. It ruins its impact. It's not interesting and flavorful anymore.
Right.
It's overwhelming and burning and hurting us.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's exactly right. So it's both a byproduct of people's stress and anxiety, right? So, you know, if I'm putting pressure on you to get something done right away, and then you might put that pressure on somebody else if they're on your team, right? You kind of push it down. So it can come from that stress and anxiety. It can also come just from a simple lack of prioritization. You know, feeling like we've got to do everything. Everything's important.
Yes, we're going to get to the importance of prioritization. Yes. And you tell these, you unravel the mysteries of urgency and the hot sauce through lots of stories. Opening with Kate, who is listeners, just, you've got to get the book because you got to listen to the stories of Kate and Kate and her boss. It improves. It ends very nicely, but it's a tough, especially that opening scene with Kate, 5:30 in the morning. That's rough. It's hard to read.
It's supposed to hurt.
Yeah, it makes your own heart race while you're reading about this one-dimensional story. All right, but we can master this. We can master the urgency. We can apply the hot sauce sprinkled appropriately and be of great benefit to ourselves, our careers, even our families.
Absolutely, you sure can.
Okay,
and that's what the book's all about. How to master it.
That's where we are. You talk a good bit about trust and vulnerability.
Yeah.
Expand on that a little bit, and maybe we'll even say a little more about. I love vulnerability. I think vulnerability is a sign of strength, not weakness. To be vulnerable is to be strong, I think, not cowardly and weak. But you roll that into trust.
Yeah.
And so explain where you're coming from with trust and vulnerability and credibility.
So in the book, I talk about my trust formula. And the reason why I talk about it is because if we're going to create urgency in others,
yeah,
urgency is a state of discomfort. So you're intentionally making other folks uncomfortable. You're taking folks that are comfortable and you're making them uncomfortable on purpose. And that's advanced leadership stuff. Sometimes we have to do that with our teams. Sometimes we have to do that with our kids. That's just part of the nature of kind of leading others. And in that moment, they're going to ask themselves, do I trust this person enough to allow them to make me feel this way? Which is why trust comes in and it's so important. We got to start with the foundation of trust. So I already went back in time 5 years. I'm going back in time a little over 10 years now. So about 10 years ago, I was teaching.
I have a sound effect for time travel that I used once years ago on the show. Maybe I'll insert a little.
You need to bring it back. It'd be perfect right now.
A little time travel music.
So a little over 10 years ago, I was teaching at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, in their business school.
And I see your Emory University diploma on your wall.
It's behind me. Yep. So, and I was teaching MBA students, and, you know, MBA students typically think in terms of numbers. And I was trying to think of, how do you take a concept like trust and make it mathematical? And I ended up coming up with this trust formula, and it's in the book. And the trust formula is authenticity plus vulnerability in parentheses. Okay. So you got to kind of think about kind of basic math principles, authenticity plus vulnerability in parentheses. And the sum of that multiplied times credibility gets us trust. And the reason why I did it that way, originally I did it as a straight up addition formula, authenticity plus vulnerability plus credibility. But in that version, you could have zero credibility and come out with positive trust. And that's not how trust works.
In that case, all three are equal, right? You could have one.
And that's not how it works. So the reason why I had to put the multiplier in there is because whenever you multiply anything by zero, what do you get? You get zero.
As you said.
Zero credibility, zero trust. And then the same is true on the other side. If authenticity and vulnerability go to zero, you got zero trust. So what we're saying is you got to show up as credible, you know, which means you're reliable, predictable. We could talk more about that, but you know, you deliver on your expectations. You do what you say you're going to do. But you also got to show up as a real human being, which is the authenticity and vulnerability side. You know, you got to be transparent about your thinking and your motives. That's authenticity. But vulnerability, you got to be okay to ask for help. Okay to say, I don't have all the answers. Okay to say, I was wrong. You were right. Okay to share a little more about your own personal story and journey with other people. That's how we build trust. And the good news is you don't have to be perfect on all those, but you just can't go to zero. You go to zero and you got problems. So it's a good reminder for us when we're sitting in that leader seat. And by the way, leader, when I talk about leader, it doesn't have to be by title. We could be leading a peer, leading a donor, leading a volunteer, whether we have a title or not. We're leading others if we're trying to influence them. And this is how we need to build trust so then we can be effective in those roles. And part of what makes the nonprofit space so challenging is sometimes there isn't really clear role clarity. So sometimes there's a lot of informal leadership that occurs in that world. And so, you know, making sure we've got enough in the trust bank account to be able to do what we need to do effectively is really important. So that gives a little bit of a high level overview of the formula. I'm happy to riff in any direction you'd like to go.
It's time for a break. Turn to communications. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. You want to be in outlets like that? CBS Market Watch, the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Turn 2 has the relationships with these types of media outlets so that when they're looking for experts on charitable giving, nonprofit trends, or philanthropy, they call Turn 2. Turn 2 calls you because you're their client. Turn-2.co. Now back to the hot sauce principle. I want to talk about using urgency appropriately to help yourself. So not to sort of help you manage your own work life, maybe even your career. Certainly, if you're doing this well, you'll be promoted into leadership.
Yeah.
Maybe you're leading one person or something, but more on the individual basis. You know, so using it and then protecting yourself from hot sauce at work, also from protecting yourself from too much urgency. So that those sort of direction. Then we'll talk about the family. You have some good stories about your three kids.
I hope they're good.
What? Pardon me? What?
I hope they're good. Yeah, that usually fun. Involves them making fun of dad, which is fine.
Exactly, right. Their own little private stories. Yes, their private laughs. So you talk about, so in with the individual, you talk about having a compelling why.
Yeah.
What's that about?
So I think when we talk about for us, one of the ways we can create urgency for ourselves, at least in our career, is have that compelling why, that sense of purpose. Why do we do what we do? And have that to kind of guide our decisions as we choose career opportunities and choose paths forward. When we don't have that sense of why, that sense of purpose, as we're making career decisions, we tend to default to shiny. Shiny could be a shiny title or a shiny brand or a shiny paycheck. There's nothing wrong with shiny, but that's not what we want the end all be all to be, because like most things that are shiny, the shine wears off pretty fast and then we're looking for a new shiny. So when the more we can use purpose as we're making career decisions, that why, the better. So that's a good long-term strategy. Now, going back to your comment around how do we use urgency in our professional development and careers?
Yeah,
a long-term strategy would be a why. A short-term strategy is set deadlines and create some kind of accountability system. So I will tell you, Tony, I'm really proud of this book that you've gotten a chance to read and we're talking about here today. It took me about 4 years to write the darn thing. And the first 3 years was because I was trying to make it a priority, but there was always something that got pushed up higher. So I finally said to myself one day, I said, look, Brandon, this isn't going to happen unless you get some help. And I went out and I hired a book coach. Her name's Kathy Fayock, and Kathy's been wonderful because she created urgency for me. She would say, Brandon, you have 2 weeks, Monday at 9 a.m. In 2 weeks, you owe me chapter 7. And all of a sudden, I had a deadline.
Right. You don't want to show up. Like, you don't want to show up empty handed.
Oh, all of a sudden, it was like I was back in college. I'm sliding the term paper underneath the door at 4:59, right? And so it reminded me of those days, and it gave me deadlines. And you can't have urgency without deadlines.
You say there are two types of urgency. You got your type one and your type two that you can use to your benefit. Flesh those out.
So these are particularly effective when you're trying to create urgency with others, but they can be good with you too. There's two kinds, worst case scenario and opportunity scenario. So worst case scenario is like, you know, if I don't change, you know, I'm going to die or something horrible is going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And then best case scenario is I've got this great window of opportunity. And if I hurry now, I can make it in the window. But if I don't hurry, the window's going to close and I'll miss that opportunity. Maybe that's a promotion or getting yourself up for a promotion or some other opportunity like that. Worst case scenario, a good example of that in a mini way is every year when I get close to my annual physical, My kids always know, and they give me a hard time because about 6 weeks before my annual physical, I start really working out hard. I start really watching my diet.
Because you're trying to bring down your heart rate. You're cheating.
I do all the things.
You start eating spinach. Your iron level is good.
All the things. So then when I get in there, I want the doctor to say, wow, you look really great. And then I can leave there and immediately go grab, you know, some French fries on the way home. But that's a great example of kind of urgency. Right. That deadline creates urgency for me. Right. And then I don't want to show up bad. It's a little bit of a fear factor. So then it motivates me to kind of get going.
So the only way to keep yourself healthy throughout the year is to have like eight physicals. Each one carries you 6 weeks.
That would be good. I could do that. But that's why people use things like accountability partners. Accountability partners are, you know, essentially a form of kind of urgency. It's like, oh my gosh, I got to call with Tony today at 1 o'clock. I better make sure I'm ready. So it kind of sets me up for that. You know, the accountability partner is another great way you can do that. And you can use that with anything.
You prepared for this call?
Of course, I prepared for this call.
Did you prepare?
Tony. Oh, well, we're prepared. I'm absolutely prepared.
I couldn't tell. Okay.
I've even got a bottle of hot sauce right here. See, I'm holding a bottle of Michelini's Tabasco.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, I know you're prepared. Yes. Well, this is all, you know this stuff. You've been working on it for 4 years. It's the culmination. This is the denouement of your 4 years of writing. Congratulations.
Right.
I should have said congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Now, so you say in the book, you got to get the book. You can use these two types together. Yeah. They don't have to be isolation. You can use them in tandem to motivate yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can. So the way that you could do it is you could think about like change or disruption is a great way to look at it through both lenses. So naturally, when change happens, we're like, oh gosh, I hate this. Like, what's it going to cost me? So say we're part of an organization that's undergoing a lot of change for lots of reasons. It could be that we're searching for new funding resources. It could be that we've merged with another organization. There could be a lot of reasons why we're part of change.
Sure.
Well, naturally, the first thing we're going to say is, oh my gosh, I could come out a loser in this. This could be bad for me. So that could be a motivation for me to make sure I'm really working extra hard and positioning myself, but it could also be an opportunity. It could be like, wow, but this is also going to open up new roles, new opportunities. And my boss is going to get promoted. And if I really show I can do her job, maybe they'll promote me into that job. And then all of a sudden I become a director or whatever the role happens to be. So, change is a great event that occurs to us that we can both look at it from a motivator, from making sure that we're surviving, but also that we could be thriving and opening up new doors.
So your perspective is important. Whether you view this sort of fearfully or as a challenge and an opportunity.
Yeah, and I could be even more concrete. So in 2020, that great year that we love so much, change. That's all change. And so much of my work up to that point was in person. Like when I would work with nonprofit teams, they would ask me to come on site. Or if I would do speaking engagements, they'd ask me to come on site. Well, naturally, all that went away. But then all of a sudden, people began to get more comfortable and learn how to do things virtually. And then that created a new opportunity. Well, how can I serve the audiences I want to serve in a different way? So it's every change brings opportunity. It's just looking at it through that way. And then creating some kind of urgency around it to keep us moving.
The one thing I want to quote, I don't quote often, but just this one little sentence I loved: create productive action, not unproductive anxiety. And that kind of subsumes all the things you've been saying in the past several minutes. You know, look at it productively and opportunistically. And I don't use that pejoratively at all. Use as opportunity and not to be unproductive and cause you fear and anxiety.
Right. So let's talk a little about that too, if it's okay, because urgency is also anxiety. So what I'm prescribing here today is to intentionally put anxiety into the system.
Yeah.
I want to be clear, because that's super not what people would be thinking right now. They'd be thinking, well, I don't like anxiety, Brandon. Why are you making me add more? But it's intentionally using it because anxiety in the right doses, urgency in the right doses stimulates action. You've ever woken up in the middle of the night thinking about work? Well, one of the healthier ways to deal with it is to grab a pad of paper and write down the stuff you're thinking about so it gets out of your head, or to just get up and start doing work. It stimulates action. So we want to use it so it stimulates us into moving forward. What we don't want to do is just sit and let it spin in our head and paralyze us. That's the unproductive anxiety, is when we feel paralyzed. We're not moving because that energy is not going anywhere. It's just sitting in our head.
Yeah.
And one of the ways, the healthy ways we eliminate anxiety is either through activity and action, whether that's doing work or exercise or those kinds of things, or it can be through meditation and calming our mind. I wish I could say I was great at the second one. I'm probably not as good at the second one as I wish I was. I'm a little better at the first. But that's how we get anxiety to kind of release, is either through meditation and prayer or calming our mind or by actually taking action. So this is a way for us to take action and use it productively.
And if you're not being productive at it, then to deal with, you're not dealing with it productively, then you're talking about releasing. You're releasing cortisol into your bloodstream, and cortisol and adrenaline, these negative, harmful hormones.
Yeah.
Cortisol. You know, it's that feeling that of warmth that you warmth and anxiety you get when you're waking up at 3 a.m. thinking about work. And all of a sudden, you know, you get like this hot flash.
Yeah.
You know, these hormones are bad for you. So do something productive, meditation, get up and work, jot your notes down. Like you're saying, you know, everything, I'm just repeating your wisdom. You know, I'm just it's like a bulletin board here. You post something on my forehead and then you can read it back or hear it back. That's all. That's all you're talking to a podcasting bulletin board. All right, let's move to protecting yourself when folks are pouring too much hot sauce on you at work. There's too much urgency. And one of the things you mentioned is prioritization. And you got other tips, you got other ideas, strategies too, but let's start with the one you already mentioned, prioritization. How does that help protect you?
Yeah, so what prioritization allows us to do is, so when we're talking about prioritization, part of it is us prioritizing our own events, our own activities. But more importantly, where this becomes an issue is when our leader or boss shows up and says, oh, I want you to, no, stop doing what you're doing. I want you to work on this new thing. And they keep changing the priorities, or they make everything a priority. Then that's going to create a tremendous amount of anxiety for us. It's an interesting piece of research about 3 or 4 years ago. They asked the question of what's the worst kind of boss to work for? And I have a clinical therapy background. I thought they were going to come back with the yelling and screaming angry boss that pounds their fist on the table. That was not number one. Micromanager wasn't number one. Ghosting boss wasn't number one. Number one was the highly unpredictable boss. The one that you never knew what you were going to get on a given day, because that creates a lot of unfocused anxiety. And so we sometimes get that experience where we have bosses constantly changing priorities or constantly adding a new thing to the plate. So where this is really important is sitting down with your boss and forcing her or him to prioritize. Basically saying to them, hey, I love all the ideas you're giving me. What are maybe the top three I need to focus on this week? And doing that as proactively and preemptively as you can. And then constantly kind of keeping them in the loop on the things you're working on. So that you can be focused, so that you can move down a path and you're not allowing them to add more hot sauce to your plate.
At several spots in the book, you give actual language that you can use in an email or in a conversation. You know, yeah. Acknowledging that there's a lot of priority and urgency, well, there's a lot of urgency and that it's important for our success, but for me to be successful or for our team to be successful, we need to prioritize. But you're more eloquent at it. So that's why you got to get the book. If you want the eloquent version, you got to get the book.
And you have several
statements you can actually use.
Yeah, and it's all there for you. And the simple way to do it, the simple reason why we're doing that is because if everything's a priority or everything's urgent, we're just going to be spinning every day. Yeah. We're never actually going to make any progress on anything.
Our
boss really doesn't want that, and we don't want that. So, you know, if we can help manage her or him a little bit and force them to prioritize, it'll allow everybody to win. We'll actually make progress. And that'll be more fulfilling for all of us.
The ghosting boss, you mentioned that just as an aside, but I don't know that one. What's the ghosting boss?
So it's a common term when you can't find a boss, you can't find a leader, they ghost you. You're like, where are they? I can't find them. Like, I need this decision made. Well, I thought they were, I don't know where they are. One of the patterns of less than healthy bosses that I've uncovered in my career. The boss you can never find, we need to make a decision.
It's time for Tony's Take Two. Our nation is counting on you. You are among the institutions that the country needs to have hold. The folks who are supporting you, who love you, they don't want to see you probably even hesitate, let alone end. You're among the institutions. It's not only law enforcement and the media and the judiciary and the military. You're an institution of the United States. And the folks who know you and love you, they want your work to continue. You need to continue it. Americans are counting on you. So please, keep doing your critical work. Keep your head down. We all know what we're going through. But there are folks who are counting on you. And I don't even just mean, well, that's annoying. Next time I'll put my phone on airplane mode like I'm supposed to when I'm recording. And I don't even just mean the people who you're serving, if that's your work and if you're serving people. I mean your communities, whoever they are, however they're comprised, they're counting on you. You are an institution of the United States. We need you to keep up doing your work, keep standing for your values. We're counting on you. And Nonprofit Radio is behind you. I'm behind you. That is Tony's Take Two. Let us return to The Hot Sauce Principle with author Brandon Smith. You can lower the heat as a way of managing hot sauce and urgency at work. What's there?
Lowering the heat is another way of saying kind of prioritization. Like what is the most urgent here, or when do you need a pie? So, you know, if something's high heat, they're going to say, I need this by tomorrow, or I need this by yesterday. That's like ghost pepper heat. Okay. If you can.
Ghost peppers, I gather, are very hot peppers.
Very hot peppers.
You can tell a story about a video you watched about a hot pepper eating contest.
Yeah.
You mentioned ghost peppers last, so they must be the most extreme.
They are one of the most extreme.
Scoville.
Apparently, I think there's like a Grim Reaper heat one, like a North Carolina Reaper that's really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
So
on the Scoville scale.
Scoville scale, how you measure the hotness of those peppers.
Right. It goes into the tens of thousands, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It goes into, yes. Yeah. 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 It can be further than I can handle, Tony. That's all I can tell you.
Are you a hot pepper eater?
I love hot sauce and hot
peppers. Not just that hot sauce? Oh, do you eat the peppers? Do you use them in your cooking?
I do, but I will tell you, while I love them, I will, I just start dripping in sweat almost immediately.
Well, the Grim Reaper scales the hell out of me. I just wouldn't even touch
called Grim Reaper is probably not something I would want to try.
a food called the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, probably right. Not something I'd want to try. Yeah, I think the idea of so it was interesting. I was getting ready to do a talk right before COVID hit, and I was supposed to be going to Vegas, and I was talking to all these auto shop owners, 15,000 auto shop owners, and I was going to do a talk on urgency. So these are small business owners, and they run mechanic shops. You know, so take your car to get it fixed. And one of them told me the story as I was getting to prepare, and I was interviewing some of them. He said, "You got to watch out for the hero trap." He said, "You know, when you jump in and you're rescuing all the time, that's another way that we perpetuate urgency, because we're always rescuing each other." And that's a real common kind of a relational orientation we sometimes hold in the nonprofit space, because we're such close teams that sometimes we can end up rescuing each other. It can perpetuate a lot of urgency. Hmm. And then he also added, he said, you also have to be real careful. You don't overpromise when you don't need to. And he gave the example. He said, you know, you might have a customer come in and Mr. and Miss Jones, and they come in and they've got a problem with their car, and you promise to get them to the car by the end of the day. And all of a sudden, by making that promise, you made it urgent. Well, they never said they needed it by the end of the day. Maybe they're going out of town for the weekend and they're not going to need it till next Tuesday. You didn't ask him that. You just promised by the end of the day, all of a sudden creating urgency that didn't need to be there. So hero traps and making promises that we don't need to make are all ways that we inadvertently create more urgency in our life than we probably need to.
We could just say no.
Oh, yes, you could. Yes, you could. That's a really, really hard thing to do.
You have it in the book.
I know. It's a really, really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it's hard for all of us in general, but you can't be strategic, whether you're talking about your own career or you're talking about your organization, if you can't say no. And I'll say, working with in the nonprofit space, it's one of the more challenging things, because no often means we're shutting down a program or a service or some kind of way we're helping others. And that's really hard. We love to start up a new one, but that mm-hmm. often means we got to prune something. That is so hard, because that's like a baby to us. And you know, and that's doing something in the world that is meaningful to us. But learning how to say no is really important as we try and navigate the urgency and setting boundaries. So in another way, we could say this is all about setting healthy boundaries in life.
That's where we're going. Yes, let's talk about boundaries and the importance of enforcing them.
Yeah, so it's one. So I think you hinted on something really important just by the way you said it. It's one thing to say what your boundaries are. It's another thing to actually uphold them.
I got that idea from you, Brandon.
Well, I tell you, Tony, it's hard for me too. I'll give you a great example. I know for my life, my rhythm that works best is when I do all my work, which is typically a lot of coaching, a lot of like kind of therapy sessions, a lot of that, or working with teams intensely, doing that between 9 to 4 every day, because it's pretty emotionally draining work. Mm-hmm. And then I use the time before 9 to do administrative stuff and the time after 4 to do administrative stuff. Well, there caught a point towards the end of last year where I was having a lot of demands on my calendar. So I told my wonderful assistant, Nancy, I said, Nancy, let's go ahead and open up 8 to 9. Let's open up 4 to 5. So she did. And she did a wonderful job of booking me down to the minute. I mean, I was just like 30-minute calls back to back to back to back to back to back. No room for lunch. I mean, I was just going all the way through. And about 2 weeks of that, I realized I was burned out. I had stretched too far, and it was causing me to have a lot of anxiety and just stress in my life. So I went back to Nancy and said, all right, Nancy, we got to go back to 9 to 4 because this is not working for me. Well, the next time she scheduled a meeting at 4 o'clock, I had a choice in that moment. I could have just accepted it and said, well, Nancy's looking out for the best of my interest and there was no other place. I'll just take it. Or I could say, no, I set that boundary. I gotta push back on that.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that said, you know, I'll just do it. It's not going to be a big deal.
Right. It's one time.
But if I do that one time, now I just told her that's really not a firm line.
Yeah.
So I had to send an email and copy Nancy and said, I'm sorry, Nancy, this time's not going to work. It's after 4 o'clock. She was, apologized profusely, but that's important to us in life. When people, you know, when we set a boundary, we've got to make sure we hold it. If we tell our boss we're not going to be available after 7 o'clock at night because we spend time having dinner and putting our kids to bed, well, we've got to stick to that. We whatever boundaries we set, we gotta hold.
And we're going to get to the family, but let's turn it over to Brandon. What would you like to talk about, hot sauce principle related, that I haven't asked you yet? We'll get to the family, but what would you like to talk about?
You know, I think when we were talking about this show today, part of the angle we wanted to take was professional growth and development, how to help people kind of, you know, grow in their careers and really become amazing kind of rock stars in their careers.
And thank you for reinforcing for listeners that we do talk in advance. The show is prepared. It doesn't just come together slapdash.
It's prepared. Absolutely it is prepared.
Because they're stuck with a lackluster host who is a mere bulletin board. You know, they may think this just, you know, you and I talked to like 20 minutes ago and here you are. But it's not like that. It's not like, so thank you for reinforcing, for validating, unsolicited. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Of course. So I want to, it ties into what we've been talking about a little bit about even managing urgency. One of the best things you can do that will help not only set boundaries, manage your time, but also please your leader that you're supporting is to be really, really clear upfront on expectations. If you can clarify expectations, not only your expectations, but your boss's expectations, you can prevent 50% of all work-related people dysfunction. So imagine that 50% of all people-related dysfunction at work goes away.
Yeah. Managing expectations.
By clarifying expectations. And when we don't do that, we allow people to guess. And inevitably, they'll guess wrong. And someone gets upset. So if you've ever had a family member get upset at Thanksgiving, it was probably because somebody didn't clarify expectations with her or him.
They'll guess to your disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah. They came in thinking one thing. It didn't meet their expectations. They threw a big temper tantrum and all of a sudden Thanksgiving wasn't quite so happy. Well, the same thing is true at work. So one of the simplest activities, but the most important, is make sure you're regularly clarifying expectations with your leader. And when you do that, you also are forcing them to manage their urgency, because you're not allowing them to just operate like they're suffering from ADD every day. Because you're forcing them to set priorities. You're forcing them to tell you what matters. And then you allows you a way to kind of follow up with them.
Okay, right.
So so I would say that's a really important thing we haven't talked about yet that is a great career strategy.
Okay, cool. So how about we talk a little about family and home?
Okay.
Using this, sprinkling some hot sauce appropriately, you like to, you get sort of a 90-10 rule. Talk about prioritizing the 90% and the 10% at home.
Yeah, so for lots of reasons that we probably don't have time to go into today, what has happened in particularly if we've got kiddos growing up right now, is that everything seems to be urgent all the time. Their travel sports team acts as if that's the most highest priority. Their teachers act like everything that they're doing in that class is their highest priority. There's a lot of pressure on kids' demands and our demands as parents. And then of course there's all those volunteer activities that are coming our way. And as everyone on this call knows also well, and all too well, that it's the people who are the volunteers that got asked to get volunteered the most. Right? The person who's volunteering three or four places is being asked to volunteer four or five places.
Because they're the ones who get things done.
Tap on the people that get things done, and we keep tapping on them, right? And so all those are demands. So I want you to imagine like a hub and spoke. You're in the middle, and all these things are spokes coming into you, okay? And if we don't prioritize, they're all going to feel equal. Travel baseball is going to feel just as equal as replacing the air conditioner in our house that's broken. It's all going to feel equal. And so we need to create that rather than hub and spoke circles. We need like a bullseye. We need the circle of the stuff that's 10%, the focus of our time that is our family. There's that stuff that we don't ever want to compromise. And that's however you define it. That might be time having dinner every night with your family, or might be time on Sundays where you connect with relatives or whatever it happens to be, or time where you exercise. But it's time you never want to compromise on. And using that old kind of analogy of you put the big rocks in first, put those big rocks in first, and then our smaller rocks, and then our sand last. So putting those in first, and then you allow the other things to come in. When we're not intentional, we become reactive, and we allow other people's urgency to become our problem. And so then we react just because we're essentially playing tennis with things that come our way. You know, we want it out of our court, so we hit it back into the other court. But we got to make sure we're intentional about putting the important stuff in first.
Family, health, your partner.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
So, there's no right or wrong answer to that, but those are the categories. You already listed some really important categories. Our relationship with our significant other, our family, our health, rest is really important. Making sure we're getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
Doctors used to say 7 hours was the target. Now they've moved it up to 8. They want all of us having at least 8 hours of sleep. That's got to be protected. Time downtime for us to wind down. Just those things that are important to our rhythm and pace of life, so we always show up at our best.
You got some other ideas like delegating in the family or delegating in the home, outsourcing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got some other ideas. You could say no. You could say no at home too.
You could say no at home. So you mentioned outsourcing. For folks that don't know what that means, outsourcing is a fancy way of saying, what's the stuff that I do during the week or on the weekends that I'd really rather use that time doing something else, and I can pay someone to do that for me. So maybe that's mowing your lawn, or maybe that's your dry cleaning, or maybe once a month you have somebody come in and do a good once over into your apartment or your house. It's just finding those activities that you would rather not spend your free time on. And there's more higher and best use of your time. And so you find folks that can maybe support you in that. So you can be using your time the way you really want to.
It's time for our last break. Quote, there's nothing as simple as dot drives. Our executive team meets once per week to sit down and go through our dot drives pipelines. It's fun to watch them have a healthy dialogue and to see them get excited about their numbers rising toward their goals. Dot Drives has allowed us to take those key relationships and bring them to a deeper level. End quote. That's Wendy Adams, Director of Donor Engagement at Patrick Henry Family Services. Prospect to donor, simplified. Get their free demo. For listeners, there's also a free month. It's all on the listener landing page at tony.ma/dot. We've got buttloads more time for the hot sauce principle. Now, I'm the guy who does not have children, but you could, it seems if you did have those child units, you could delegate.
Absolutely, you could. Absolutely, you could.
That's the reason for raising them to manual labor age.
If you are smart, you're doing that.
This is now you can see why I don't have children, because I see them as economic labor units.
I will tell you, and it's just like with delegating at work, right? Because what happens is we delegate at work, we say to ourselves, you know, it's so much easier if I just do it myself.
Yeah.
Because the first couple times this person does it, it's going to be slow. It's not going to be good. But if you go and invest that time, then pretty soon they're doing it without you. In my house, what that has taken the form of, Tony, is laundry. Okay. So I've got my oldest, she's now a freshman in college, and I've got two boys that are teenagers. They all do their own laundry. Okay. There were many, many, many a casualty in the process, Tony. The girls' Lululemon workout pants got shrunk down to doll size on more than one occasion. Lots of casualties. But now everybody knows. Everybody knows how to do laundry. They know how to do their own laundry, and they even know how to do other people's laundry. So my boys know if it's girls' workout pants, we're not going to dry those. We're going to hang them. And they hang them. And they're doing all the laundry while I'm not. And so absolutely. But I want to acknowledge the fact that there's just like any delegation, there's a learning curve that happens.
Right. You make it sound pretty good. Maybe I should have had children after all. I think of the time I spent.
It's not a bad gig. It's not a bad gig. Although they end up with, once they get to become teenagers, they end up with very creative nicknames for you.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You see, that's the part. I wouldn't be able to handle the mom and dad are stupid stage. After everything I've done for you for the past 15, 16 years, now you think I'm ignorant and embarrassing? I wouldn't be able to, my ego couldn't handle it.
It gets more creative than that. So you're seeing me, your listeners aren't seeing me, but what my kids like to call me now is they've said, one of my many nicknames is off-brand Obi-Wan Kenobi.
All right, you're all white. Your beard and your hair are all white.
I'm all white looking, so I kind of look like Alec Guinness from the original New Hope Star Wars.
Alec Guinness, a little bit, yeah.
And they say, but I'm off-brand. Like, I'm like the cheapo version. I'm like the Dollar General version of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay.
See, creative insults.
Creative insulting. Yeah. I don't think I'd be able to handle it. And so, all right, you can, let's just round out this home family discussion with how you could turn up the hot sauce, turn up the urgency a little bit to your benefit at home.
Yeah, so turning up the urgency is necessary as you're raising any kind of fully formed adult, is trying to get them to realize sometimes they're too comfortable. And most parents have probably had the experience where you walk into your kid's room and you told them two or three times that they need to clean their room, and you go in and they're laying on their bed and the room's filthy and they're watching some show on their phone. They're too comfortable. So we use urgency to create a healthy state of discomfort. So you say, I want your room cleaned. You have 2 hours to get it cleaned. If you don't have it cleaned, that phone is mine for a week. That's a form of urgency.
Yeah.
We're setting a deadline and we're ramping up the hot sauce and we're giving kind of a worst case scenario if they don't do it.
What about with a spouse or partner? Can we go there? Is that you don't mention that in the book, but you got me thinking about it now. Because
no, you can. You want to be real careful on that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Sounds like fun.
This is playing with fire. So the easier one with the spouse and partner is opportunity scenario. To create some kind of a reward system, like, hey, honey, let's do like a workout challenge. And let's see if we can hit this goal in 6 months. And if we do, let's reward ourselves with a trip to Hawaii. So that's a form of opportunity scenario. Like, can we work out together, support each other, create pressure with some measurable goals with a reward at the end.
Yeah, that sounds all right. That sounds doable.
That's good. That's happy stuff. Now, when you might want to use hot sauce in the worst case scenario is when you've been asking your significant other to do certain things that you feel like are reasonable. And then this is now the fifth or sixth or seventh time. And then you create some kind of a deadline with a punishment system. Like, you know, if you don't make this change, ooh, you know, then I'm not going to do these things for you anymore on this side.
Yeah.
So, and then you have to stick to it to show them that you're serious. So this is, like, when, this is when we're, so when we do worst case scenario urgency with a spouse, we've got to be ready to really, really play some tough hot sauce games.
So yeah, hardball, and then stick to it, as you say. All right. All right. Something you alluded to, and you said, well, you're not sure we'll have time for it, but this is nonprofit radio. We don't skimp on our listeners. You spend a good amount of time, tick off a few things that got us here. How did we end up with this master of this uncontrolled urgency? How did we all get here?
There's a lot of reasons for it. Probably the number one reason, to just start with the first one and the obvious one, and I'm gonna hold it up for you to see it, but
yeah,
our phones.
Right. The thing that you threatened to take away from your child for a week.
What this did, while we love the fact that we can communicate with anybody at any time, anyone else can communicate with us anywhere at any time. So all our natural boundaries of work disappeared as soon as this became part of our life. Because it used to be one day, not too long ago, that when you left work, you left work. All the things you did at work were at work. All the filing cabinets, all the computers, all the resources were there. And when you went home, you couldn't work. Now we can work anywhere, anytime. And in many ways, COVID has kind of reinforced that even more so, because we've had to learn how to do that. So now when we go back, employers know, well, gosh, Tony can work anywhere, anytime. So therefore, I can call him anytime, anywhere. So our phones broke down natural boundaries. So what's happened is now we all have to set our own boundaries. We have to do that as employers and leaders. We also have to do that with our own leaders and coworkers, and creating kind of the rules of the game that are going to work for us. So that's probably the most important, the number one reason. There's many others, but I would say if we even go back to 2008, 2009, when we had that kind of economic recession, it created a lot of, forced a lot of organizations to go very lean. And so they operated with a lot less headcount. It was almost like a fear of adding on too much headcount, because I don't want to have to go through the process of letting people go again. And so it created more work than a normal full-time employee can do. Mm. And that's, I don't think there's been one nonprofit that I've worked with that hasn't had that as an issue, where they said, you know, there's, I'm not working 30-hour weeks or 40-hour weeks. I'm working 60-hour weeks, I'm working long hours. There's more work than any one of us can do. We don't have enough people. And so that's another factor that's just created more urgency, because you can never feel like you're getting ahead. It's like using an old Seinfeld reference. At one point, there was a Newman who was the postal worker, and he said the mail, it just keeps coming and coming and coming, and that's kind of what it's like at work. It's like we can never quite get ahead. So on top of never being able to get ahead and not having enough resources, you know, there's no natural boundaries. We can work anywhere, anytime. Yeah. And so that's created an environment of hot sauce being put on us every day.
Hello, Newman. Jerry used to say, cool. You're in Atlanta, right?
I am.
I'm in Atlanta. You got Emory University. Is that where you teach also?
Yeah, I still teach there adjunct when I'm not out and about in the world working with other folks. I'm still there with the business school there in both their executive MBA and their executive education arms. So yeah.
What's it like to be in Atlanta? What's it been like the past month up leading up to the January, what was it? January 3rd, 4th, 5th, something like that, election?
Highly unpleasant.
What was it like? Yeah, share.
Well,
why was it unpleasant?
Imagine every other commercial being the worst political ad you'd ever seen in your entire life. That was what was happening on every radio station and every TV station. And the extremism on both sides for the candidates was just ridiculous. I mean, after watching these commercials, you would say, well, why are even these people not in jail? It was just the worst kind of dragging
for them. Through the
mind. And a made up stuff.
All four of them are so bad. They all belong in jail.
And all extreme statements and all like doctored kind of videos and none of it's, you know, you almost not only want to throw the candidates in jail if you believe that stuff, but you definitely want to throw the producers of the commercials in jail because of the way they just butcher any real information. So it was just a lot of really unpleasant, angry noise. Hard to just keep a positive attitude when there was that much negativity. So that was definitely not a talking about emotion and energy. Not a pleasant time to kind of be consuming any kind of media that had any access to political campaigns.
I see.
Which is pretty much all of it.
Amping people up, talking about urgency, getting people whipped up into a frenzy over how bad all the other candidates are and the other candidate is, I guess.
And extreme polarization,
Yeah.
So then people scratch their heads and wonder, boy, it seems like everybody's so polarized. Gee, how did that happen?
Yeah, right.
So I'm glad it's over. It's finally quiet.
Yeah. Should quiet that, right. All right, Brandon Smith, you're terrific. Thank you.
Tony, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Genuine pleasure. Oh, I did too. Thank you. Thank you very much. The book is The Hot Sauce Principle, How to Live and Lead in a World Where Everything is Urgent, All of the Time. Got my copy, my decimated copy. When I get a copy of a book, the first thing I do is break the spine so that I can open it up and it won't close on me as I'm reading. And then I can make my notes in the page without on the right hand page without the left side collapsing on it. So I've beat up your book, but that's because I was reading it.
So it's to be beat up. I'm glad you did it.
I did. All right, Brandon. Thank you again, folks. Just get the book. And Brandon, thank you so much for sharing.
Tony, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show. Keep up all the great work.
Oh, thank you very much. And you as well. Next week, peer-to-peer fundraising in 2021 with David Hesekiel. If you missed any part of this week's show, I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. turn-2.co, and by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.